Welcome to the podcast series for AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology. I'm your host, Kara Hansel-Kean. Today we'll discuss the article by Gulopoulou et al. Titled, Thromboxane A2-Induced Vasoconstriction in Pregnant Rats. This article published online April 27, 2012. My guests today are Associate Editor Nancy Kanagi, First Author Stella Gulopoulou, and Leading Expert George Osel. Let's get started.
In this study by Gulopoulou and co-authors, a unique contractile response to thromboxane was identified in uterine arteries during pregnancy. This study was conducted in Sprague Dawley rats and found that arachidonic metabolites cause a similar contraction of vascular smooth muscle, but the mechanism for this response is markedly different. That is, in arteries from the non-pregnant rats, both Rho kinase and protein kinase C contribute to the response. But in the arteries from the pregnant rats, neither of these kinases contribute. Thus, there's a change in how the constriction is mediated, suggesting that these kinases may represent novel targets for vascular diseases in pregnancy, such as in preeclampsia, which has profound vascular dysregulation. I'd like to start by asking George for his take on what he sees as the greatest strengths and weaknesses of the current study, and then we'll hear from the first author, Stella Gulopoulou. George?
Probably the most interesting thing about it is the fact that there were no differences in the reactivity to the thromboxane analog, but there were differences in post-receptor signaling mechanism. The other thing that was interesting was that it compared regional differences and showed that there were differences in the uterine circulation versus the mesenteric circulation. I think in terms of weaknesses, as with any in vitro study, there are obviously some limitations. And also as a pharmacologic study, you're relying primarily on tools which are able to modulate molecules you think, you don't really know, they may modulate other molecules as well. But the results were fairly consistent. So I think that's it's a limitation that just needs to be acknowledged and really doesn't take away from the message of this paper.
And so Stella, if we move to you now, what would you see as sort of next steps to extend these findings?
I think it's very important that we can identify the factors that are responsible for these adaptations that happen with pregnancy. We discuss the potential factors that they may affect the enzyme activity, but we don't address them experimentally. So I think this will be the next step. For example, the role of the endothelium. We do know that the vascular wall has the endothelium cells as well as the vascular smooth muscle cells, and they communicate. So it's very important to address this issue. As George mentioned, we address the regional differences, the uterine vasculature versus the mesenteric vasculature. And to me, this is a very interesting, it excites my scientific curiosity a lot about why in the uterine vasculature we see these changes and we don't see them in the mesenteric. Are there hormonal influences? Are there factors that are released due to remodeling of the uterine vasculature and affect the activation, the post-receptor activity? I'm not sure. These are things that we have to investigate in the future.
If I could just follow up with one thought, and I think in terms of future work, of course, it would be very interesting to look at arteries from preeclamptic women, or if that's not possible, then to look at animal models of hypertension during pregnancy to see if the reactivity changes. Because in preeclampsia, it's really the elevation of thromboxane, or more accurately, the increased ratio of thromboxane to prostacycline that is sought to produce more constriction. So it'd be interesting to see if the reactivity was different in preeclamptic animal models or human vessels. One question, Stella, for you would be, in terms of using vessels, you're used, actually, they're fairly large in terms of resistance vessels, because I believe you use the main uterine artery for the uterine circulation. I think it'd be fascinating to look at the smaller vessels, and if you could use a pressurized vessel which actually constricts instead of just produces force, it'd be also very interesting to tease apart the endothelial and smooth muscle effects.
We chose the main uterine artery. It does undergo remodeling and changes. You have very well demonstrated throughout the years during pregnancy. So I do think it's relevant to pregnancy. It will be interesting to see if the responses we see in the main artery are similar in the smaller vessels and what that means. So there are things, a lot of things to be done. I think I would like to ask George a question. I have read a lot of your papers on the local versus systemic adaptations to pregnancy, in particular the model where you ligate the one uterine horn, and then you see changes in the other uterine artery that supplies the other uterine horn that is not ligated. So, and I'm trying to really use these data to make my next step, the hypothesis for the next study, about what factors that they released during remodeling of the uterine artery that you have seen may affect the vascular reactivity, or in particular in the specifics that we had, the enzyme activity, and why this factor switches on or switches off specific enzymes. Do you have an input on that?
Well, I think an interesting question is, as you say, that the mesenteric circulation, it changes, it remodels to some degree, but it doesn't undergo the expansive remodeling that the uterine circulation undergoes. It doesn't enlarge as much. So the real question is, does the enlargement lead to changes in the function as well? Because other people have shown that if you constrict vessels, there are changes in structure because of the constriction. So I guess the question here is whether there is a dilation in pregnancy that leads to remodeling, or whether there's a remodeling that then leads to changes in reactivity. As far as specific signals, we've been focused on PLGF, very potent vasodilator produced by the placenta, would lead to dilation, works largely but not completely through nitric oxide. At the same time, there's a long-term regulation, and this was shown by Pacot and in France, a group in France. And if you inhibit the nitric oxide, then you change ROA, and if you change ROA, that actually makes the nitric oxide system work not as well either. So there's a reciprocity between these two dilator and constrictor systems that involves a regulatory component.
And again, as pointed out, the biggest changes that were seen were in the uterine arteries. And so if we think of the systemic effects of preeclampsia, can you think of ways, either Stella or George, of interpreting these findings in light of the very profound systemic effects that occur in preeclampsia that lead to the increase in arterial pressure? And yet, in your normal pregnancy, the majority of the changes that you seem to see were in the uterine vessels.
Your question about the fact that the effects are limited to the uterine circulation, how do they link to the systemic? And I think the key thing lurking under this whole finding is that the uterine circulation acts as a vector that affects the systemic circulation. So if you have insufficient blood flow to the uteroplacental unit, it begins to secrete signals like S-flit and other things, which ultimately affect systemic blood pressure and vasoconstriction in other vessels. So the uterine circulation we think of as being protective to the fetus. Yes, it is. But it also in trying to survive, the fetus can damage and produce negative effects in the mother. So it's kind of a springboard into systemic problems, even though the problems are actually localized to the uterine circulation.
I like that analogy that the uterine circulation is acting as a vector back to the maternal circulation. That's good. Stella, if you would like to give us a take-home message from your study.
So the take-home message of this study, it would be that during healthy pregnancy, that is a physiological again condition, we have changes in the contribution of certain enzymes in the uterine artery in contraction to thromboxin, which is a molecule that increases during pregnancy. That makes it very interesting because this molecule increases not only during pregnancy, but increases even more in hypertensive disorders of pregnancy. So we provided insight regarding the thromboxin prostanoid receptor and downstream signaling pathways contributing to these contractions to this molecule. So we can manipulate these signaling pathways in cases of hypertension in pregnancy, for example, such as preeclampsia.
And George, would you like to give us any final words?
I guess any good research leads to more questions. And I think the question that this paper really raises is what causes these changes? And I think that Stella, in her discussion, talks about steroids as a possibility. Perhaps there are other things, but I think the most exciting thing would be to try to figure out what it is that induces the changes that are observed, number one. And number two, how are these changes altered in a pathological model of preeclampsia?
So I think this is a very interesting possibility regarding the effect of estrogens and thromboxin and downstream pathways. Already, we do know that females have higher contractility to thromboxin compared to males. And it seems that estrogen has to do with that.
So thank you both for your contributions on the ever-fascinating world of the vascular physiology of pregnancy, a difficult vascular bed to study, but one that continues to provide us with new challenges, and in this case, a surprising change in the signal transduction that may indeed provide novel targets for treatment of vascular abnormalities that are seen in pregnancy. Thank you both.
And thanks for listening to this AJP Heart and Circ podcast.